Honest work. Stepping through the gate of the mansion was like entering a portal to the spirit world. Or so Kiyoshi imagined from hearing Kelsong's stories. It was a complete transition from one set of rules to another, from a dull, mindless place where the only currencies you could spend were sweat and time, sowing your seeds and baiting your hooks in the hope of staving off hunger for another season, to a mystical universe where rituals and negotiations could make you supreme in a single day. Their passage was marked by the cool blip of shade underneath the rammed earth wall. Rangi nodded at the two watchmen, grizzled veterans of the Earth King's army, who stiffened their necks and bowed back to her in deference. Lured by better pay into Genju's service, they'd kept their dished, wide-brimmed helmets, but painted them over with the sage's personal shades of green. Kiyoshi always wondered whether that was against the law or not. Inside, the vast garden hummed with conversation. Sages and dignitaries from far-off lands constantly flowed in and out of the estate, and many of them enjoyed conducting their business among the flowers and sweet-smelling fruit trees. An overdressed merchant from Omashu haggled with a Fire Nation procurement officer over cabbage futures, ignoring the cherry blossom petals falling into their tea. Two elegant Northern Water Tribe women, arm in arm, meditatively walked a maze pattern raked into a field of pure white sand. In the corner, a morose young man with carefully disheveled hair bit the end of his brush, struggling with a poem. Any of them could have been, and probably were, benders of the highest order. It always gave Kiyoshi a thrill to see so many masters of the elements gathered in one place. When the estate was full of visitors, like today, the air felt alive with power. Sometimes, literally so, when Kelsong was around and in a playful mood. Auntie Mui, head of the kitchen staff, appeared from one of the side hallways and bounced over to them, looking like a plum rolling down a bumpy hill. She used her momentum to deliver a hard swat to the small of Kiyoshi's back. Kiyoshi yelped and gripped the jar tighter.
"Don't carry food around where the guests can see it," Auntie Mui hissed. "Use the service entrance."
She hustled Kiyoshi down the steps of a tunnel, oblivious to the hard bump Kiyoshi's forehead took against the top support beam. They shuffled down the corridor that still smelled of sawdust and wet loam through the plaster. It was more obvious down here how new and hastily constructed the complex really was. The roughness of the hallway was another of the many little details that poked holes in the common illusion those under Janju's roof tried to uphold, from his most exalted guest down to his lowliest employee. The Avatar's presence was an uncomfortably recent blessing. Everyone was going through the motions at an accelerated pace.
"You were out in the sun too much, weren't you?"
Auntie Mui said.
"Your freckles got darker again. Why don't you ever wear that concealer I gave you? It has real crushed nacre in it."
Kyoshi's skull throbbed. "What, and look like a bloodless ghost?"
"Better than looking like someone sprinkled star poppy seeds over your cheeks."
About the only things Kiyoshi hated more than gunk on her skin were the warped, infuriating values that older folks like Auntie Mui held around complexion. It was yet another contradiction of the village, that you should make an honest living toiling under the sun, but never in the slightest look like it. In the game of rural Yokoyan beauty standards, Kiyoshi had lost that particular round, among others. They climbed another set of stairs, Kiyoshi remembering to duck this time, and passed through a hall for drying and splitting the immense amount of firewood needed to fuel the stoves. Auntie Mui tisked at the splitting maul that had been buried in the chopping block by the last person to use it, instead of being hung up properly on the wall. But she wasn't strong enough to pull it out, and Kiyoshi's hands were full. They entered the steamy, cavernous kitchen. The clash of metal pans and roaring flames could have been mistaken for a siege operation. Kiyoshi set the pickling jar down on the nearest clear table and took a needed stretch, her arms wobbling with unfamiliar freedom. The jar had been attached to her for so long, it felt like saying goodbye to a needy child.
"Don't forget, you have gift duties tonight."
She was startled to hear Rangi's voice. She didn't think the firebender would have followed her this deep into the bowels of the house. Rangi glanced around.
"Don't waste too much time here. You're not a scullery maid."
The nearby kitchen staff, some of whom were scullery maids, looked at them and scowled. Kiyoshi winced. The villagers thought she was stuck up for living in the mansion, the other servants thought she was stuck up for her closeness to Yun, and Rangi, with her elite attitude, only made it worse. There was no pleasing anyone, she thought, as Rangi departed for the barracks. Kiyoshi spotted an odd figure among the legions of white-clad cooks pounding away at their stations. An airbender, with his orange robes rolled up to his blocky shoulders. His massive paws were covered in flour, and he'd tucked his forest of a beard into his tunic to keep it from shedding. It was like the kitchen had been invaded by a mountain ogre. Kelsang should have been above ground, watching the Avatar, or at least greeting a visiting sage. Not cutting out dumpling wrappers among the cooks. He looked up and grinned when he saw Kiyoshi.
"I've been banished," he said,
preempting her question.
"Genju thinks my presence is causing Yun to prematurely dream about airbending, so we're trying to keep him focused on one element at a time. I need it to feel useful, so here I am."
Kiyoshi sidled her way over to him through the crowded space and gave the monk a kiss on the cheek. "Let me help." She washed her hands in a nearby sink, grabbed a ball of dough to knead, and fell into work beside him. For the past decade, Kelsang had essentially raised her. He'd used what leeway he had with the Southern Air Temple to reside in Yokoya as much as he could in order to look after Kiyoshi. When he had to leave, he foisted her upon different families, begged alms to keep her fed. After Genju brought the Avatar to Yokoya for safekeeping, Kelsang twisted his old friend's arm to hire Kiyoshi on. He'd done all this, saved the life of a child stranger, for no reason other than that she needed someone. In a part of the Earth Kingdom where love was reserved solely for blood relations, the monk from a foreign land was the dearest person in the world to Kiyoshi. Which was why she knew his good cheer right now was completely fake. Rumors flew around the house that the once legendary friendship between Avatar Kuruk's companions had deteriorated, especially so between Genju and Kelsang. In the years since Kuruk's death, if the gossip was to be believed, Genju had amassed wealth and influence unbecoming of a sage who was supposed to be dedicated solely to guiding Kuruk's reincarnation. Bending masters came to the house to pay obeisance to him, not the Avatar, and decrees that were normally made by the Earth Kings instead bore Genju's seal. Kelsang disapproved of such power-hungry actions, and was at risk of being completely shunted to the side. Kiyoshi didn't have context around the politics, but she did worry about the growing rift between the two masterbenders. It couldn't be good for the Avatar. Yun adored Kelsang almost as much as she did, but ultimately was loyal to the Earth Sage who'd found him. Distracted by her thoughts, she didn't notice the little puff of flour fly up from the table and hit her in the forehead. White dust clouded her vision. She squinted at Kelsang, who wasn't trying to hide the second shot that spun around above his palm, chambered in a pocket-sized whirlwind he'd summoned.
"It wasn't me," he said. "It was a different airbender."
Kiyoshi snickered and grabbed the flour bead out of the air. It burst between her fingers.
"Quit it before Auntie Mui throws us out of here."
"Then quit looking troubled on my behalf," he said, having read her mind. "It's not so bad if I take a break from Avatar business. I'll get to spend more time with you. We should go on a vacation, the two of us, perhaps to see the air nomad sacred sites.
She would have liked that very much. Chances to share Kelsung's company had gotten rarer as the Avatar and his teachers sank deeper into the mesh of world affairs. But as lowly as her own job was in comparison, she still had the same responsibility to show up every day. I can't, Kyoshi said. I have work. There'd be time enough in the future for traveling with Kelsung. He rolled his eyes.
Bah! I've never seen someone so averse to fun since old Abbot No Fruit Pie's Dorje.
He flicked another blob of flour at her, and she failed to flinch out of the way.
I know how to have fun,
Kyoshi whispered indignantly as she wiped her nose with the back of her wrist. From the head of the cutting board tables, Auntie Mui gave a tongue-curled whistle, interrupting their debate.
Poetry time, she said.
Everyone groaned. She was always trying to enforce high culture on her workers, or at least her idea of it.
Lee,
she said, singling out an unfortunate walk handler.
You start us off.
The poor line cook stumbled as he tried to compose on the spot while keeping count of his syllables.
The weather is nice. Sun shining down from the sky. Birds are singing. Good?
Auntie Mui made a face like she'd swigged pure lemon juice.
That was awful. Where's your sense of balance, symmetry, contrast?
Lee threw his hands in the air. He was paid to fry things, not perform in the upper ring of Ba Sing Se.
Can't someone give us a decent verse?
Auntie Mui complained. There were no volunteers.
I've got cheeks like ripe round fruit,
Kelsung suddenly pitched forth.
They shake like boughs in the storm. I blush bright red when I see a bed and leap at the sound of the horn.
The room exploded in laughter. He'd picked a well-known shanty popular with sailors and field hands, where you improvised raunchy words from the perspective of your object of unrequited affection. It was a game for others to guess who you were singing about, and the simple rhythm made manual labor more pleasant.
Brother Kelsung,
Auntie Mui said, scandalized.
Set an example.
He had. The entire staff was already chopping, kneading, and scrubbing to the raucous tune. It was okay to misbehave if a monk did it first.
I've got a nose like a dove-tailed deer. I run like a leaf on the wind.
Lee sang, evidently better at this than haiku.
My arms are slight and my waist is tight, and I don't have a thought for my kin.
Mirai,
a dishwasher yelled out.
He's got it bad for the greengrocer's daughter.
The staff whooped over Lee's protests, thinking it a good match. Sometimes it didn't matter to the audience if they guessed right or not.
Kyoshi next, someone said. She's never here, so let's make the most of it.
Kyoshi was caught off guard. Normally, she wasn't included in household antics. She caught Kelsung's eye and saw the challenge twinkling there.
Fun, eh? Prove it.
Before she could stop herself, the rhythm launched her into song.
I've got two knives that are cast in bronze. They pierce all the way to the soul. They draw you in with the promise of sin, like the moth to the flame to the coal.
The kitchen howled. Auntie Mui clucked in disapproval.
Keep going, you naughty girl,
Lee shouted, glad that the attention was off him. She'd even managed to throw off Kelsung, who looked at her curiously, as if he had a spark of recognition for whom she was describing. Kyoshi knew that wasn't possible, when she was simply tossing out the first words that came to her head. She thumped a length of dough onto the table in front of her, creating her own percussion.
I've got hair like the starless night. It sticks to my lips when I smile. I'll wind it with yours and we'll drift off course in a ship touching hearts all the while.
Somehow, the improvisation was easy, though she'd never considered herself a poet.
or a body-mind for that matter. It was as if another person, someone much more at ease with their own desires, was feeding her the right lines to express herself. And to her surprise, she liked how the inelegant lines made her feel. Truthful and silly and raw. "For the way I walk is a lantern lit that leads you into the night. I'll hold you close and love you the most until our end is in sight." Kiyoshi didn't have time to ponder the darker turn her verse took before a sudden pain shot through her wrist. Kelsang had grabbed her arm and was staring at her, eyes wild and white. His grip squeezed tighter and tighter, crushing her flesh, his nails drawing blood from both her skin and his. "You're hurting me," she cried out. The room was silent. Disbelieving, Kelsang let go, and she caught herself on the edge of the table. A map of purple was stamped on her wrist.
"Kiyoshi,"
Kelsang said, his voice constricted and airless.
"Kiyoshi, where did you learn that song?"